Blog Talk Radio.
Blip will be joining us en route. It has been an absolute mind-blowing week, and of course we lead the show off with Bad Boys theme from Cops, and unless you are dead and have no clue, you probably have heard and are aware that we've had four Alabama players arrested this week, and so basically, you know, I'm going to center a little bit, and I'm going to make a disclaimer right now, folks. For listeners, if you're younger or you've got kids, we will be playing some music this evening that is explicit. So when we go to break, it will be rap music that has got words in it that you just don't want kids under 12 to hear, period. But so I will make that disclaimer and then let the ball drop as it drops. But, you know, we've got lots to talk about. Welcome, Kerry. How are you, old friend?
I'm doing pretty good, considering all the craziness that's gone on. I was somewhat heartbroken to hear that one of the two assaults happened on the sidewalk just outside my home in College, Patey Hall. That really brought it home for me. But, yeah, a lot of crazy things going on, a lot to talk about. Got a preliminary list of 2014 recruits. Now, fast signing day is behind us. Got some big names. Oh, and just so much else going on, hirings, comings, goings, rumored offensive line coaches. I don't really know where to start, so you take it back, Bird.
Well, let's see. We need to do the ping pong thing on the mic mute. So anyway, I've got my Skype up, and I'll be able to mute whenever you're talking. You know, I've got Steve Skipper coming on tonight. Steve is a dear friend of mine, and I'm not going to blow the intro, but I asked him as a special favor to come on this evening and discuss some of this. Now, I don't know if the Bama Nation knows, but does the name Kevin Steele ring any bells, Thomas?
As you just said that, I think Clemson just gave him another touchdown to West Virginia in that god-awful Orange Bowl.
Well, you know, Kevin's coming back to Alabama. I don't know if you realize that.
Yeah, but not as a coordinator, just as an off-the-field coach/recruiter.
Player personnel.
Basically, player, he's a recruiter.
And I've got some commentary on that as well. But I think that part of what's going on is that Bear had, and Steve will touch on this, had a cadre of coaches that all the did help bait youngins up, so to speak. And, you know, we have turnover within the coaching ranks, and, you know, Saban is on vacation, and the cat is away. Somebody fill in the blanks.
The youngins will play?
The youngins will play. So anyway, you know, I want to touch on that. I want to get into a little more of a rather than easygoing, light banter, maybe sort of a sociological discussion on where we're headed as a society. And maybe through tonight I can get some enlightenment from you guys and from the listeners as well. But we've got, you know, young lady Catherine Webb. Love to know your input on that as far as, is Catherine Webb good for AJ, or was AJ good for Catherine Webb? You know, she's in the swimsuit edition of this with a Alabama number 10 jersey on and a lovely little thong. So Catherine is definitely on the radar screen. We also have got Alabama basketball, and I don't know if it's just me or is the entire SEC sucked this year. That was a terrible game last night, and every game I've watched has been brutal. And is it just that we are playing a suffocating, smothering defense and making the other teams look that bad, or is the SEC down as a whole? Because I don't think we're a good team. I don't think if we get to the tournament, we get to play ball, we would stand a chance. You know what? Again, that's for discussion this evening on the in the ensuing minutes as BAMS rolls out. As Kerry says, he's got some great information on upcoming recruiting. Missed last week with the recruiting night, and sorry I missed that. I was coming out of a fog, so to speak. And if you heard the well, you know what? Actually, we've got people to plug this evening. I know Kerry has had articles in his mag. Kerry, what have you been writing for?
For about 12 years. Well, the last article I wrote was about the Alabama-LSU basketball game, which is sort of old news now. But I certainly observed every minute of last night's game. I was quite thankful that Blip and Thomas had me on the air with them, and I only had a blurred, sideways, not paying attention view of the second half of the Auburn game last week. I probably would have been a lot more upset about it if I'd actually been paying attention to it. It was awful, and I don't really want to talk about it, but I just want to thank Blip and Thomas for having me on with them at that time, because the TV was on and I was in the room with it, but all I was really looking at was the score, not how ugly it occurred. So that was since then, two wins, neither one of them very offensively impressive. However, I saw some heart last night when Georgia made the run to go back up by one with 3 minutes to go. I started to think to myself, oh, crap, here we go, another road choke. I was sort of thinking about Tennessee. And all of a sudden, Levi Randolph hits a three, Rodney Cooper hits a three. We start to go gangbusters on defense, and we go on a 9-1 run. And our defense has a lot of heart. Our offense has a lot of fear of missing shots. And Coach Grant finally had to tell Levi Randolph last night, look, man, when you're open, wide open on a three, stroke it. I don't care where we are in the shot clock. You know, I think kids have gotten to be where they're afraid of getting yanked from the game if they brick a three-pointer. And hopefully now we're getting past that point. I don't have a logical explanation for the offensive slump Trevor Lacy has been going through this last week or two. I have no really clue about that. But I was very happy with the heart guys like Levi and Rodney Cooper showed last night, and Trevor Relford, and I don't know if I imagined this or not, but it looked like I saw Nick Jacobs trying to play post defense, and that really hasn't been something that's been going on all year. I thought that the team could have folded up, as my friend likes to say, like a granddaddy long leg spider last night, but they didn't. When they went down by one, they responded, and they responded big time. And it was a character victory last night because it was on the road in a semi-hostile environment against a mediocre team, I know, in a horrible conference, I know. And you made the point, Bird. There ain't but one team in the SEC that's worth the crap, and that's the Florida Gators. But if Alabama can somehow – other than going to Gainesville, which will be a beatdown of all beatdowns, but they could somehow win and maybe win one in Nashville, they can get back into the picture for the NCAA. I still think this is the NIT team, but if they can win out, with the exception of at Florida, which is a quality loss, then they can get back into the conversation. They're not in the conversation right now.
Well, I let me jump in on basketball real quick.
Tom, I was trying to kick it to you, brother. I was trying to find out what was going on with Bama Hammer magazine and what's happening out there. So whatever you want to talk about, you got basketball, jump in, because I could spend 30 minutes talking about the basketball team. Anyway, it's all
been 30 minutes talking about the basketball team in the end. I actually, I wanted to give my boss and good friend Tony Orlando a shout out, because it was Bama Hammer that actually broke that arrest story early Tuesday. Funny story about that, he asked me for a criminal attorney to talk about that too, and of course it has to break on Tuesday when Mobile is shut down for Mardi Gras, so I was out. But in terms of what I'm bringing up on Bama Hammer, I'm focusing on softball. You know, I think combining sports with beautiful women and writing is a fabulous set of circumstances for me, as well as more esoteric stuff. I'm going to bring up something about recruiting rules and how they're going to positively affect Alabama. It's a little silly what the NCAA did, in my mind, from a competitive standpoint, but that's the NCAA's deal. And I'm trying to build something right now that proves that Nick Saban's process is not just at Alabama, but it's actually showing fruit in the NFL through, like, high-end player quotes that are just extraordinarily complimentary of an Alabama, just a Bama player, not a specific player, just the ethos that surrounds Alabama. So that's what we're working on right now. And also, if you're a student listening to BAMS, if you're an Alabama student, get in touch with me if you play club sports. Bama Hammer is trying to open up a wing of writing that covers the smaller club sports because, well, I was a student once. Y'all don't get any coverage, and it's nice to read about yourselves. So get in touch with me through Bird, and we'll try and work out a deal. Now, about basketball, which we're going to talk forever about, I'm kind of with Carrie. This team is kind of Jekyll and Hyde, but definitely a heart gritty win last night. But I'm taking a big old let's see what happens next. Every game, I just don't know. So that's where I am with Bama basketball. Anyway, Bird, I'm going to relinquish the floor for now and kick it back to you. I think Blip just got on with us.
He did. Welcome, Blip. And what far flung iceberg are you floating on right now?
Well, they would send me to Cleveland when it's not baseball season and I don't get to watch the Tribe. It's tragic, really.
And no LeBron with the Cavs. So.
No, I mean, the Cavs are in town tonight and I don't even care enough to go.
I'll go watch Alonzo G. Come on.
Not a bad idea, Kerry.
Michael Warren?
Yeah, I'm wearing my Alabama hockey jersey tonight. I go yell Roll Tide through the whole game. Probably be the most spirited fan in the stands at the half game.
Speaking of fans in the stands, and Kerry just made a comment about a hostile crowd. I don't know if you guys actually saw the crowd shots from the game last night. There must have been all of maybe 3,000 people in there.
They announced 5,000.
Shit.
A crock. By the way, Blip, Ole Miss lost at A&M tonight, so Alabama is now tied for second with Kentucky, who lost Nerlens Noel for the year today. Hate it for the kid, but it may work out in Alabama's favor in the long run.
That injury to Nerlens Noel was scary. I was watching the game, and I was just like, ooh, turn away from television cringe for a while.
Well, it's basketball is one of my passions. I love it about as much as I love football. And watching this year in the SEC has been, I think Vanderbilt is down. Tennessee sucks. In fact, hire Bruce Pearl. You heard it here first. I'm ready to be an offense. I am so, you know, in fact, the guys last night, did any of you guys catch during the broadcast? I've been saying this for 2 weeks. That get the Alabama players out of the weight room with Coach Cochran, because they all look beefy to me. That is the beefiest bunch of, you know, dog food eating basketball players I've ever seen in my life. I mean, they have packed on the pounds. They've got tons of muscle. I don't think you need tons of muscle to play basketball. And even the commentators last night made the comment. I think Levi was Randolph was actually taking somebody to the basket, and he says, yeah, he's built like a fullback. They can't guard him because they fall off of him. But what do you guys think? I mean, do we have the right complexion to play good basketball? Are we running offenses that make any sense? I mean, the offenses to me are stagnant. It's like we've got shootitis where the kids are afraid to shoot. And it's like the coach is having to tell them, and Kerry and I were talking before the show, you know, he had to get in Cooper's face last night and say, if you're open, take the shot. So I don't get it. I hate the flow of the game right now. I guess maybe it's partially with the personnel he has. Maybe it's partially when Engstrom went down, you know, having to remold and refit, retool that team to a team that can basically use Moussagay on defense and then use Nick Jacobs on offense. Input, please, gentlemen. Bail me out of here.
That's isn't it funny? I mean, we've been emotional about Alabama basketball. Talk about highs and lows. I mean, we opened the season with the tournament, which I think most people thought we would win 2 out of 3. End up winning the tournament, beating a pretty decent Villanova squad, and I think a lot of people came out of that going, oh, okay, I'm a believer. Right on. So, you know, started off with an uptrend, and then the loss to Mercer and Tulane back-to-back, talk about a death spiral. I think Bama fans were ready to throw it in the toilet. Now here we are, over halfway through the SEC schedule, tied for second in the league at 8-3. And we're bitching like this? It is super ugly basketball, but you know what? They're winning games.
I hate to say this, and I'm a huge basketball freak. I like coaching basketball. I like watching the nuances of the game. Bail me out. What is it that I'm not liking about this team and the way it's being coached? Because it's driving me bat crap crazy.
But I'll tell you one thing. Even when we win, you feel like we could have lost. I mean, how many games have we won by 2, 3, 4, 5 points? You know, we squeaked by LSU. We won by a bug fart against Georgia. You know, it took some last-minute heroics to beat Arkansas. A lot of those 8 conference wins were close enough that you walked away from it going, boy, we did everything we could to lose that game. And that sticks in people's heads over the course of a season, especially when you fail to close, when you fail to finish against Mercer and Tulane, and you know that we are capable of choking on it to the depths that we have choked.
No, the ultimate choke blip was Auburn. I'm sorry. I will never, ever, ever forgive the El Foldo that happened last Wednesday night, the Alamo of Alabama basketball. They sucked on the play. Did not represent me or you or themselves. And I think their coach was ready to throw up his hands and walk off the floor, too. Total disgust. What happened? Because Auburn sucks. I mean, they're really a bad basketball team. Tony Barbie's got a crummy team down there. And to go down and have your head handed to you the way they did is absolutely inexcusable.
No worries. I've heard it called the worst Alabama basketball loss in the past decade.
I have been following for a long pre-win days Alabama basketball, and I don't know that I've ever seen a team absolutely throw in the towel the way they did against Auburn last week. Maybe it was the Cam magic. You know, Cambo was up in the stands.
Well, I saw 2 games in Auburn that were both worse than that. They were 50-point losses. One came in David Hobbs' last year. One came in Mark Godfrey's first year. They both hurt me way worse than that ugly debacle the other night. That one hurt, but those two I just named where Auburn scored over 100 in both games and beat us by 50 in both games. That, you know, our team got discombobulated in the second half. All I could see, like I told them earlier, Blip, I was glad you guys had me on the show because I really wasn't paying attention to the second half of the game. It was the really ugly part. But we've won 2 games since then, and we attempted very much so to give away the LSU game in the final minute this past week. LSU was just so bad they couldn't take it. And what you described, Blip, when you described walking out of the arena or turning off the TV set and feeling like you had lost even though you won, you described what I would call Gene Stallings basketball. Because I walked out of Legion Field and Bryant Denny for 7 years after many a victory over people like Tulane, feeling like, wow, we must suck if we can only beat them by 10 or 12 points. That's, you know, the bottom line is the W and the L. The NCAA computers don't recognize style points. The polls do, but the computers don't. Like I said right before you came on, Blip, I feel like Alabama's got to steal one at Ole Miss and can only afford one more regular season loss in Gainesville to get back in the NCAA conversation. And even if they do all that, it still might take a win or two in Nashville. But I think they've got to steal the Ole Miss game and win out every other game besides Florida to even get back in the convo, is the way I see it.
Well, you got to like our chances this weekend against South Carolina. I mean, that's a very beatable Gamecock squad.
Oh, they're awful. And I like our chances at LSU. I like our chances for the whole rest of February, Blip. But the first week of March, you got to go to Oxford and to Gainesville. You're not going to win in Gainesville. So what you've got to do is steal one in Oxford to give yourself a chance to get the RPI back into the NCAA conversation. If you lose in Oxford and Gainesville, then all you're playing for in Nashville is a chance to get good NIT home game seating or whatever. Because they're probably and you can also pray. I don't know how it's going to work out, but you can pray that you don't get in Florida's side of the bracket in Nashville. If you could somehow get hot and just get to Sunday before they whip you, that would be okay. If they did that, then they would probably make the dance, barely. Maybe one of those date and play-in games or something. But they could probably make it if they did that. But the SEC is so bad this year that Florida and Ole Miss, and, you know, they lost tonight at A&M. So, and Ole Miss's top reserve power forward is out for the year. He was no Nerlens Noel, but he was a solid guy that came off the bench and helped Ole Miss win some games early in the year. So Alabama, actually, as crazy as it sounds and as bad as they're playing, they have a chance to finish alone in second place in the conference. And that may not be enough, but they have a chance to finish in second place in the SEC regular season.
That's mind-boggling.
Well, one of the things we're going to do tonight is a sociological analysis, and we keep it light and we keep it above board and we do some it's BAMS, it's for the fans, about the fans, and I mean basically it's our radio for Alabama. But I've been very, very, number one, I have to give, a year ago when Auburn had their four kids basically commit their armed robbery, I was high and mighty. I ran around and was like, yeah, look at that, Auburn. You're out of control. Your program sucks. You're a bunch of hoods and thugs. You know, now that's come back to bite me completely in the butt, because now I've got four of my own kids that wear the crimson that went out and curb stomped. Well, not all of them. Okay, I'll take that back. We don't know what all went on, but allegedly curb stomped a couple of students, co-students. I mean, people that are, down there on campus with them. To the point that I know at least one of them was rendered unconscious. And the night before, I think, he had flashed a gun. Now, help me through this again. And we're going to open up the phone lines after we get Steve on, probably the last quarter hour, because I'm not sure how this is going to roll. But I got to tell you, is this an indictment? It's not an indictment on the program, because we know what kind of program Saban runs and all the extra effort that he puts in through the different people he brings in and the tutelage and the coaches, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What's going on within our society that would – and is it a black thing? Is it a hood thing? Is it just a societal, across society? Because Steve made this comment this afternoon and had a long discussion with him, and he said, you know something? And Kerry's – Jim, I lit the fuse, run away. Let me mute first, Kerry, and I'll put you on. But one of the things he said, he says, man, that kid that because I was asking Steve, I said, does rap music have anything to do with the mindset that would put a kid in this situation? And he said, yeah, maybe 50%. I don't want to steal his thunder when he comes on. But, personally, I'm trying to get out of my little Wonder Bread bubble that I've lived in my entire life and try to understand where these kids are coming from. You know, watching, let me be quiet and you guys chime in, because I know Kerry literally is on the edge of his chair.
Well, just to answer your question, is it a white thing? For over a year now, Auburn has been on the internet calling us the Updikes. Just in the last week or two, we have begun to call them the Disneyukes. That's our response. So it's not just a black thing, because these multiple incidents that Dismukes, who is a Caucasian center for the University of Auburn from Spanish Fort, Alabama, these multiple incidents he's now been involved in, now I'm not just talking Reuben Foster, I'm talking the incident at McDonald's that the attorney spoke to us, not being a psychology major or anything like that, I guess because they made me declare a minor, I was a sociology minor, but I don't really claim any kind of expertise in that. I think, Bird, that it's not more a black thing as much as it is, and this is a two-parter, A, an entitlement thing, and B, a testosterone thing. And the testosterone could result from many different sources. You know, kids try to do things to get ahead in the weight room if they think they get past the urine test, or they take these type of supplements. And I just have to think, in some cases, side effects are rage, number one. Number two, you have kids that have been handed things on a silver platter, five-star recruits, star of a team their whole life, and then they get off to Tuscaloosa and they become a little fish in a big pond, and maybe there's a and Steve, I'm sure, can address this better than me, but maybe there's a sense of having to prove their manhood. And, you know, I've seen a lot. It's a very short opinion. I've seen a lot of negative feedback from geniuses like Skarbinski and the various Auburn moderators, and they're screaming at Nick Saban because he didn't immediately dismiss the kids from the team. He put them on indefinite suspension. Chase Goodbread and others researched the history of Nick Saban's indefinite suspensions, and none of them have ever made the team. That's number one. Number two, and this is going to be the last thing I say about it before Steve comes on, this incident goes far beyond Nick Saban. You have three kids that are probably facing A, expulsion, and B, at least two, probably three, are facing jail time. So it goes way beyond Nick Saban kicking somebody off the team. The University of Alabama and the city of Tuscaloosa County, what have you, will take care of that aspect of it. He ain't going to have to worry about kicking nobody off. The only person that has a small chance, because he was not involved in the robberies, is Callaway, who did admit to using the fraudulent ACT card, which is basically a debit card now. It wasn't when I was in school, but it is now. But he's a two-time offender, because in a year and a half ago, he was caught possessing marijuana. And a little-known fact that you get information on in places like here on BAMS is the person in the car with him that night was none other than DJ Petway. Now, DJ wasn't charged in that incident, but another little-known fact that you'll get nowhere else but BAM Radio, when Coach Saban sent Deron Carter to Bradford to get rehabilitated from his problems, he sent DJ Petway with him. That's why DJ didn't practice for the bowl game last year. So this is a two-strike guy here, too, okay? The only person that I know of, or I thought I knew, being their first strike was Tyler Hayes, and then one of my sources tells me that he had some kind of minor infraction during the semester. I don't know if he slept through an 8 o'clock class or what he did, but my understanding is that none of them are on their first strike, and that even if they were, you got expulsion and possible or maybe even probable jail time. Now, that may be some kind of thing worked out because they're not 21 yet. I don't know all the legality of that. I'll defer to Thomas on that. But let me just say my last statement. This goes way beyond Nick Saban.
Let me jump in and completely agree with you, Kerry. I don't mean to be agreeing with you. I've read everything you say. But Nick Saban could functionally do nothing, and it doesn't matter. Two of them have already confessed to doing it, and these are serious charges. You have criminal liability because, well, it's armed robbery, and you have civil liability where this kid will be able to pursue damages from these young men. Either of those things is going to preclude anything that Nick Saban could do. It's going to take care of itself. And for people to be howling at the moon because Nick Saban is not just arbitrarily throwing them off the team, I challenge them to say, what if it was your son or daughter that got sucked into a situation? Let's relate it to a very recent case. You know, everyone's been all over Reuben Foster for flip-flopping back and forth. There has been crap from Auburn fans that he went to Bama. Then there was crap from Bama fans when he went to Auburn. And now you hear that his dad just got arrested because of a bunch of heinous crimes. And in the light of day, I can make an argument where Reuben Foster is now an 18-year-old kid trying to do what's best for the child and is just making mistakes. Is my argument as legitimate as Reuben Foster is a stupid 18-year-old trying to job the system? Yeah, they're both legitimate, and they're both partially right. So for Nick Saban to take the step of indefinite suspension and not just completely throw him off, that seems fair to me. He's given them a shot to have their day in court. And yes, do I think they're going to be convicted? They've got a confession. I expect them to be committed. But they're committed, excuse me, convicted. Committed might too. But I expect them to be convicted. But you deserve your day in court. And once you get a day in court, then fine, throw them off the team. I don't care what you do with them. If they're guilty, it's not going to matter. But, you know, whatever. It's people trying to generate a story. I'm only going to defend Nick Saban's actions. If these young men did what has been reported, and one of the students who was in one of the altercations actually said something to the Crimson White today, good Lord, get them away from the football program. They are cancers. Best, they are cancers. So I'm going to get off my soapbox and let y'all.
This is unbelievable. Well, listen, we're going to take a break real quick, and I'm going to kick it to you guys know who Jay-Z is? Ring any bells? Yes, no.
Partial owner of the Nets.
Yeah, partial owner of the Nets. Pretty big guy. You know, he's a rapper. You know what an OG is?
Original gangster.
There you go. Well, somebody had to tell me that, but, you know, I'm in a different generation. I'm going to play Born in OG by Jay-Z. I think this is actually the edited, cleaned-up version, and some of the stuff I'm going to play later, Body Count with Ice-T, is not. But we're going to put you are listening to the After Football Before A Day edition of BAMS Radio. Thank you for listening. You got BAMS with Bird, Blip, Carrie, and Rockwatts.
I wake up big guy, homicide in the bay. Smoking, drinking, about a cave. I was one of OG, if you heard about me, I put 4 or 5 in your head. Hey,
as if the guillotine chopped off my noggin, I got my head gone. Got my pedal to the metal and my Lambo popping in the red zone. Feeding like demons, it's reason heathens, it's breathing hard. But I roll with some heathens that just don't seem to believe in dawn. They'll whoop your head, boy. Put your body in the bottom of the ocean. Meanwhile, Ludacris is in the MIA with Ace Hood somewhere smoking. Got a f*** in the smell on my shirt, so I'm looking like roll it up. How you swimming in a pool of blood? Cause I super soak it up.
Dad, I'm gonna come back with it right quick, like this.
Come back with it. Nasty and ludicrous on the track with it. Got enough ammo to blow you out of proportion and put him on his back with it. I'm so wrong, I'm so good, I'm so dangerous, ain't I? I'm so gone off these suckers, but the flamers will bang ya. Cause I'm a solid aimer. The fat lady got a song and sang ya. Meanwhile, I sass all your b**** in my Hunker 700 airplane hanger. I'm so fly, that is a shame. Smoking by the bush with that.
I wake up big guy, overpowered in the bay. Smoking, drinking,
about a cave.
I was one of OG, if you heard about me, I put 4 or 5 in your head. I wake up big guy, overpowered in the bay. Smoking, drinking, about a cave. I was one of OG, if you heard about me, I put 4 or 5 in your head. Young gutter, A-Hood, homie, don't loot, I got him. Ruthless, homie, in a
never gon' fall, you can count me doubting, baby. In a Lamborghini drop top, and I can't stop myself from stunting lately. And I'm sticking to the dollars in my motto, you can follow, tell them how to pay me. I'll meet them hollows in the back of the tie, ho, they coming at a spiral, viral day. And then this phone with it, I ain't tripping out, sitting about 50 with a body bag. Tip it up, shit, shit, bitch. At the bottom of the ocean fast. Then I sit back down, me and Ludacris pass, pass. You will need a gas mask, think you can to bag that. Guess who won't back with it? Hey, Wolf, don't act with it. Ruthless. Tell them other brothers don't fly, cause they know that I'm packing it. Give me cars and your keys and your jeans and your green. If you see, then you're coming up absent. And I roll with the back of them goons, and the only thing tools with body packed in it. More money, I'ma keep on stacking it. 100,000 for the chain, immaculate. New whips, I'ma keep face tagging it. New swag and a Louis Duff bag with it. Hey, good, that's true, you mad with it. So why you haters and you fake ain't tagging it? I got a hit with the name, you can have it.
I'll wake up and got over 5 minutes in the bay. Smoking, drinking, about a cave, about a cave. I was one of OG, and he heard about me. I put 4 or 5 minutes in your head. I wake up and got 4 or 5 minutes in the bay. Smoking, drinking, about a cave, about a cave. I was one of OG, and he heard about me. I put 4 or 5 minutes in your head.
What's up? What's up? What's up? Gonna bust this promo here. Bam's Radio. Now, Bird, what
please
you do?
Stop.
What you do, Bird, is you take your ring finger and your middle finger, and you wrap one over the other. Okay. So I know that you got fat fingers, so it's probably hard, but
can't do it. Okay.
Do try. Okay. So then you tuck your thumb kind of down, and you kind of make a W. And when somebody asks you which coast is the best coast, you put a little W up, and you're supposed to tell them in your cracker ass self, the West Coast is the best coast.
Oh, thank you.
That's the proper response, you see.
So what I'm going to do is, you know, right now, again, and Steve, welcome to BAMS. Thank you for coming on with us this evening.
Hey, Greg, how you doing?
Doing great, man. Outside of having my heart broken by 4 of our football players this week, I'm doing fabulous. But thanks for asking. As you got, Steve's been on this 2 or 3 times, and over the period of time that I've gotten to know Steve, he is erudite, intelligent, fervent believer in Jesus Christ. He is one of the best people that I've had the honor of being introduced in my life. He's a genius when it comes to painting. He paints absolutely gorgeous portraits. But I hope I'm not embarrassing you this evening, but one of the things that most people don't know is, number one, Steve's a black guy. Okay, so you can probably tell from tonation. But secondarily, Steve was in a gang. And you were a Crip, correct?
Correct.
You were a Crip. So, I reached out to you today and said, please come on BAMS tonight. Help me try to wrap my head around what's going on with not just, you know, it goes back to Reese Dismukes, as Carrie said. It's not a black-white thing, and you corrected me this afternoon. Is it a societal issue? How much of what we do or don't do within society with the kids that are coming up, you know, you listen to, I'm an original OG, original gangsta, and that was the toned down version. But the connotation of that is I'm a member of a family from the hood, and I've got, you know, it's, are these kids, is there not parental guidance? Or not even parent, but adult guidance, I would say. Help me understand, Steve. And I've got 5 different layers of question I'm hitting you with. So first, yes, you were a Crip, so you kind of understand the mentality of coming out of the streets and understanding What would attract you into a society like that? Help me.
Well, I think that the problem, you know, like we were talking about, I mean, when we're coming from the perspective of gangs, I think that's just one aspect of the problem. It's a very small aspect of the problem. It's not a lot of kids listen at rap music, but they never act out, you know, what's really been said. Rap music is not just an African-American thing. I mean, the thing that makes rap music...
All right, we got a real bad connection, Steve. I'm sorry. You're on cell phone, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing that makes... Well, hold on for 1 second. Is that better?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, the thing that makes rap music successful as it is, you know, financially successful, is not money that comes out of a ghetto. I mean, rap music is extremely accepted in suburbs. And when it comes to gangs and drug dealers and people like that, they know where the money is. And this is not a new thing. The money is not really in a ghetto when it comes to drugs. The money's in the suburbs. I went to Homewood High School. I didn't go to Parker. I didn't go to West End or anything. I went to Homewood. I dealt drugs at Homewood High School to students and teachers. And the dealers that I worked for, they knew where the money was, and they know where it is right now. And so when it comes to that aspect of it, you know, as we were talking today, you know, the shootings and stuff like that are not all 100% gang related. The shootings that happened, you know, in the theater where the guy went in the theater or the movie theater and killed all those people, that didn't have anything to do with gangs. The guy that killed all the little kids in the school and the teachers and stuff like that, it had nothing to do with gangs. So, I mean, the problem is a whole lot broader than gangs and rap music. That our young people are under a spiritual attack, something that can't be legislated, and something that certain parts of society has responsibility for, but they don't want to take the responsibility for it. And two of the biggest parts that have responsibility for what's going on with young people are parents and spiritual leaders in churches. And they're not accepting the responsibility, trying to pass the buck to everybody else who don't have the answers. And a lot of gang members and drug dealers and people like that, the reason why they prey on young kids and they're successful doing it is because they take advantage of dysfunctional kids that have dysfunction at home, and they're vulnerable. And those vulnerabilities make kids susceptible for something that's missing at home.
Does the gang become a surrogate family to these kids?
Not only do gangs become surrogate families, but there are a whole lot of other different organizations out there that become surrogate families. Gangs become surrogate families. The Aryan Nation becomes surrogate families.
Crimson Tide football team. The Crimson Tide football team.
It represents... You know, when you got coaches who are recruiting these guys, and these guys are have all kind of dysfunctions at home, and the family unit is not really structured, and the father is not there, and when a coach comes out and he uses the term, you know, we're a family, it's on. But at the same time, when they come to that team, they bring in baggage. They're bringing a ton of baggage with them now.
Right.
And 5 stars on a football field doesn't mean that you know what you're getting your hands on.
Right.
And this is not brand new, because Coach Bryant had problems with players. If you talk to the Ozzie Newsoms and all that kind of stuff, everybody that came to Alabama under Coach Bryant didn't stay. You know, he made a statement that he couldn't do in 4 years what parents didn't do in 18. So when Coach Saban is strong, a player that has been at home with a parent for 17 years, and he's just got this player for 1 year or 2 years or 3 years, and you want to miraculously straighten this guy out, that's not going to be possible. That's why Coach Saban has in place, and Auburn has in place, and a lot of the teams have in place, a structure of spiritual help that these guys are going to need to not just make them a greater football player, but to change their lives.
So, i.e., some of the stuff that, because we've had them on before and friends of both of ours. Gosh, I'm chemo brain tonight. The Castile
Jeremiah
family.
Jeremiah Castile, forgive me. The FCA at Alabama is extremely strong. Chet Williams and the ministry that he has at Auburn is extremely strong. You hear about incidents like you hear about, you know, these four guys, but, you know, there's 94 other guys that are doing real good work in communities and stuff, and they're great citizens, you know, and there's a reason for that. So four guys don't make a football team.
No. What this is a treatise, I guess, tonight, Steve, on trying to understand, trying to, you know, how did we fail these kids? Because, you know, you get off to college and blip, you can, and both, you know, I didn't have the I don't want to say luxury, but I was not available and could not go away to school. I was a commuter at Memphis State, and just didn't have the money to be able to go off to school. But, you know, Blip has been away to school, and Thomas has, I know Kerry has. When you go away from home, I mean, there are certain things that you're going to run into as far as temptations and whatever, that mom and daddy are not standing there.
That's just a normal kid. But when you've been treated like a prima donna all your life because of your athletic ability, and then on top of that, you've got these personal dysfunctions on the inside. And when you go to a place where you offered pretty much everything you want,
right,
and then you get to a place where now you, at the same time, exposed to a whole lot of stuff you've never seen before, you're in a total shock when it comes to where you are. But at the same time, like I said, these guys got a whole lot of baggage that they're bringing with them, and they're not going to sit down and tell Coach Saban, and they're not going to sit down and tell Coach whoever what's really going on. A lot of these guys, their parents don't even know. When it comes to gang membership, you don't go and tell your parents you're a crook.
Right. Hey, Mom, I just joined the Crips today.
You don't go and tell your grandmother that you've been trained how to kill.
Right.
I mean, you don't do anything like that. You never tell anybody anything about your drug use and your drug sales and everything else that gang members do other than drugs and other than guns. You don't say anything about that. I mean, the whole society and the whole origin of that thing is so secret. It's not funny. I mean, when it comes to the Italian mafia, they don't want you to believe that it exists, so they can do what they do.
So they can do what they do. One of the things that Kerry just popped in on our back chat, he made a comment that, and it involves testosterone too. So, I mean, you know, you put all this together, lack of fundamental values, a lack of whatever the adult guidance, because I don't think Ruben has had real good adult guidance. And I think everybody that's a Bama fan puts question marks on how successful he's going to be at Alabama. And it's too bad, because I think we've all kind of prejudged him on this, you know, pendulum that he has swung on, going back and forth, you know, to, is it going to be Alabama? Is it going to be Auburn? Blah, 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 blah. And I think
it's no way to tell. It's no way to tell concerning that, because, you know, when Derrick Thomas first came to Alabama, he had more baggage than Samsonite, the company Samsonite. Derrick Thomas came from the same community that Deion Sanders and a lot of those guys did in Florida. Those guys came straight out of the gangs. They were extremely dysfunctional. Derrick's father died early in his life. He never had that real good relationship with his dad, never had a real good relationship with his mom. When he came, he was a loose cannon when he hit Alabama. But he didn't leave like that.
No.
So, and then there was a lot of other players that I know that were like that. But so, you know, Ruben, you never know. I mean, there's some people at the university on that coaching staff. Those guys not only know how to coach, those guys know how to turn players' lives around. Bertrand Burns at Alabama is extraordinary. I mean,
yes.
He's way past being one of the greatest running backs coaches that he is. he's made a huge difference in the lives of a lot of those guys, because when Glenn Coffey first got there, he was a mess. When Trent Richardson first got there, it was another. I mean, these guys, with the backgrounds that they came from, were terrible. And when Mark Ingram first came down there, I mean, his background with his dad and the situation that was in was terrible. But Bertrand Burns nurtured those guys as human beings. And the what we saw in the football field was one thing, but what Coach Saban and those guys do behind the scenes with those guys' character is extraordinary. It's extraordinary. Some things go on down there that are never talked about by the news. The coaches are tremendous people, and stuff that you that you see coming in there from a recruit, I mean, from an individual human being, they see some stuff that you would never believe. And a touchdown on a football field is extremely minute compared to the success that they have when those guys get ready to leave with a degree.
Steve, I'm gonna stop you for half a moment. You've got extremely good rapport with the coaching staff down at Alabama, and I know you. I won't name any names, but you were with one of the upper ups in Jalon this week. How have they reacted to this? I mean, I as a fan am gutted. What's the feeling with the coaching staff on what's happened with these kids?
I mean, these kids. You know, to us, you know, they're football players, but to those guys, they're like family, and they're like their kids. And so it's extremely extreme disappointment and hurt. But at the same time, you got other kids coming in and other kids that are actually there. Somebody was criticizing Coach Saban on the radio today about the fact that he just didn't abruptly just throw the guys off the team. Well, you got to understand something. He's just heard somebody else say what happened. And there's going to be probably right now while we're speaking a face-to-face meeting between him and all four of those guys. Because until he talks to them, he doesn't really know what happened. Because,
it's one thing
to hear what happened. It's another thing to hear why. And even though why is not justified, you're dealing with kids and you're dealing with lives. I remember when Coach Stallings dealt with David Palmer. David Palmer had an extremely bad incident when he was on the national championship football team
right.
in 92. That Coach Stallings, it was told by everybody, kick him off the team. And Coach Stallings realized he was dealing with a young man's life. You know, he took him off the field and punished him off the field, but he was realizing that all these guys are not just machines and not just things that we get off an assembly line. We're talking about human beings, and all of them are different. You know, they're all different. And the genius of a coach is to be able to deal with each individual correctly. That's the genius of a good coach.
Yes.
And so Coach Saban is doing that right now.
Did Coach have to come back off of his vacation?
Yes.
So he came back early. Ouch. Kerry, you're not sitting in the studio with me, and I'm looking at Kerry. And when I said that, you said yes. Kerry made a face like, oh, man, that they just had to call Dad in from work. You know, oh, boy. Well,
you know, as a dad, you're a dad. I'm a dad. You know, there's two reactions to news that your kid is in trouble or your kid's done something bad, you know. But if you don't have it from that perspective and you're just looking at, you know, football players or whoever, it's a totally different perspective. But I can tell you this. I mean, he has a tough reputation, but Nick Saban is one of the most caring people you've ever seen in your life. And there's a reason why those guys have went through a wall for Nick Saban. So he knows how to deal with players other than just shooting somebody in the head and throwing them away. Coach Saban is an extremely great motivator. And so there's a reason why those guys will go through fire for them.
Well, it's I really can't tell you. And I wish you were reading the back chat of the BAM's host tonight, because this has probably been one of the better segments we've ever had on the show. And I can't thank you enough for taking time out of. And folks, I got to tell you, this guy has got commissions to paint. Individual players, he's got commissions to paint finishing up the Grambling thing. Just name some of the things you're working on, Steve. I mean, it blows my mind.
The NFL is celebrating the 25th anniversary of Doug Williams winning the Most Valuable Player in the Super Bowl for the Washington Redskins, and he commissioned me to do a painting for them, and we were working with the Washington Redskins and him in the NFL with that one. And Eddie Lacy grabbed me in the collar the other day, and so he made it clear to me that he wants his painting done for the win over Notre Dame. And so we're reproducing the thing with Grambling and what we got with Eddie Robinson and the one that we're releasing right now. Coach Smart wanted me to wait until the season was over before we did the 2011 National Championship piece. So he's going to be involved with that and with Ashley Harris with Memorial. So we got some stuff with the Dallas Cowboys coming back up with Jason Witten wanting a new painting. And so it's a whirlwind.
It's a whirlwind. Well, you are not only gifted, but you're a wonderful human being. And we truly, I think all of us on bands, you guys have anything for Steve? Because I know that Carrie's been sitting here and I've seen the back chat from Thomas and Blip. Blip, do you have anything for Steve?
No, I think all the points are very good. You know, one thing, most of the media, especially some of the local pinheads like Skarbinski, are going to go into attack mode on this and use it as criticism.
Oh, they have.
One guy, sure, and nobody's surprised. One interesting perspective I thought was, and it surprised me, was Stephen A. Smith. Stephen A. is more of a basketball expert, and to me, he's very quick to judge. He's quick to pop off at the mouth, and he's kind of one of those gum flappers on ESPN that it's real easy to look at and go, okay, next. But he made a good point. Stephen A. said, guys, it's not like these young men are going to be surprised when Saban blows his top. It's not like these guys don't know what the reaction from the coaching staff is going to be when they do this kind of thing. So don't go after Saban for not being a disciplinarian. Everybody on the team, their teammates, their friends, the assistant coaches, the staff, everybody knows that Saban's going to flip out over this. So it's not like there wasn't an expectation. And if you think there wasn't an expectation with those kids for how Nick wants them to behave, you have got your head in a bucket of sand. You don't know what's going on in Tuscaloosa.
I want you to remember something. I want you to remember something about Coach Saban. Remember the tornadoes that came through Tuscaloosa. You remember how he settled that team down?
Yep.
And through the horrific situation that those players and coaches and everybody had just went through, and he settled that team down and ended up hosting Crystal in New Orleans. If he can handle that, sure, he can handle this. And this is a bad situation, but one thing I think that a lot of people are overlooking, this situation could have been a whole lot worse, because remember the guy that had the gun?
Yep.
One of the players that had the gun?
Yep.
He could have used that gun.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that he didn't. I mean, what he did was bad enough, but it could have been worse. Because with his mentality and with the way that those guys are thinking, with that gun that close, it could have been a whole lot worse than it was. And I'm glad that he didn't put his hands on that during the time when all of this stupidity was going on. So I'm quite sure Coach Saban knows what to do.
He does. Steve, again, thank you so much for your time this evening. And again, if you haven't seen his artwork, you can go to his website at anointedhomes.com. Is that correct? Or anointedhomesart.com, Steve?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I really appreciate it, guys.
Well, it's you're good people and you're plugged into the program. And I absolutely value your input. And again, thanks for coming on the BAMS.
Thank you so much for having me, Greg. I appreciate it.
All right, man. Take care, and we'll talk to you later.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye.
Well, You know what? We're going to go to break. I haven't seen Legend on yet, and we're going to hold with this. This particular break is going to be about a six-minute break, and it is fairly explicit. And we're going to have a little iced tea body count. And, you know, I'm still kind of wrapping my head around. And you know what? I'm going to save my commentary on the local news for when we come back for break. I'm hoping Carrie will stick with us, Blip, and Rock. We're going to take off. See you in six. You're listening to Bounds Radio.
Ice-T, after your tremendous success on your past album, some have said you've sold out because of the use of rock and roll in your music. How do you reply to that?
You see, a lot of people don't realize that, you know, rock and roll is truly black music. It was created by Chuck Berry, Little Richard, and black people like that who started off back in the day, you know. And as far as I'm concerned, music is music. I don't look at it as rock, R&B, all that kind of stuff. I just look at it as music, you know. And anybody who said that I sold out, they can basically suck my dick, because I really don't give a fuck about that shit, you know. But I do what I like, and I happen to like rock and roll, and I feel sorry for anybody who only listens to one form of music. Now, right now, I got my own rock band that's got to jump off. It's a real black hardcore band called Body Count. And on some of the records, I'm like laying some vocals on it, and I got a tape of it right here. Yo, check it out. You know, sometimes I sit at home, you know, and I watch TV, and I wonder what it would be like to live someplace like, you know, The Cosby Show, Ozzy and Harriet. You know where cops come and got your cat out of the tree? All your friends died of old age. But you see, I live in South Central Los Angeles. And unfortunately, shit ain't like that! God damn, what a brother gotta do to get a message through to the red, white, and blue.
Jams Radio. We took a little bit longer than normal break to drop a little iced tea on you. We are going to open phone lines. Going to go to the first caller of the night. Jocelyn, you are live on Bams Radio. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing good. How are y'all doing?
We're well, thanks. What's on your mind?
I was just calling in to say how proud I am of how Alabama's basketball game was yesterday. You know, Georgia came out and they showed, you know, they showed up and it looked like they were really ready to play and everything, but Bama came out and they proved they were the better team.
Well, it's not always pretty, but anytime you win a conference game on the road, it's something to be proud of. So agree
yeah.
that and you know what, not much has been made of this, but Georgia had won five straight. That was a hot Georgia team.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not giving ourselves enough credit for a pretty quality win. I mean, Georgia's not exactly a perennial basketball power, but they had won five conference games in a row themselves and fully expected to beat Alabama on their home floor. So seems like we're taking two steps forward and one step back. I think the fan base would like to see some of that momentum carry through and get on a longer run, but it hasn't been – the wheels haven't fallen off the way some of us feared they might.
Yeah.
But it's a good point. Thanks for calling tonight.
You're welcome.
You got anything else for us this evening?
No, I just wanted to congratulate on the great win.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for calling us.
Always good to hear from you, Josh.
So I want to get back to, you know, Birds tried to keep us on theme with the socioeconomic, however you want to put analysis tonight. And Steve made some very good points about the staff. And if you take the crimson glasses off, we probably would have found that there was some heartache and disappointment with the rival when some of the bad things happened on the other side of the fence. And Bird, I feel the same way that you do, that we did some crowing about that. I mean, it was something that really since, I guess it's back to Brent Callaway and the pot thing. And prior to that, what was the last incident we had involving discipline? Was it Jeremy Elder? You know, it really, we've had a reasonably clean 3 or 4 years with the program. And I think we all felt like everybody was doing it right. One comment that I want to make, and then we can move on to other things. I know Kerry wants to talk about recruiting, and I certainly, if we want to cycle back to basketball, I would love to hear if Kerry, if you have any insight into Ahmad Hill, the 5-star shooting guard that recently watched us play and visited with Anthony Grant. But when it comes to what the expectations these kids have, especially when you're 5-star, you know, Eddie Williams was considered by many one of the top 10 high school football players in America. And there's certain expectations that are set in regards to you. Where your social status should be. You're a big man on campus when you're one of the 10 best football players in America. A lot's given to you, and that inflates the ego. And one thing that you've got to remember is that if you don't come from a lot, if your family's not well-to-do, you know, you're struggling to pay the bills, you're struggling to pay the rent, maybe don't have a father figure, or have a father figure and don't have a mom, or you know, whatever, single parent, dual parent, whatever the situation is, if you're struggling at home, a lot of these kids see one particular material possession as a great equalizer. And there is an awful lot of both symbolic and literal power in a gun. And, you know, we've all got day jobs. You got, you know, everybody on the show, we've all got day jobs. We've got families. We don't need that great equalizer for us to feel like we have some worth when we look around at, you know, look at our friends at church, or our peers at work, or whatever the case may be. That equalizer isn't needed. But when your ego is out of balance, and one part of you is telling you that you deserve to be at a certain status, and you look around you and you don't see that reflected in your reality, you start thinking about how do I remedy that? How do I elevate myself? How do I gain power? And there's a really interesting book, if you feel like getting super nerdy and wandering off down a philosophical branch. There's a man named James Twitchell who wrote a book called For Shame. And essentially he boils most of the problems in America with violence and struggle between socioeconomic classes, but specifically violence and how violence is used as a tool. A lot of it he boils down to the erosion of the sense of shame, that you don't see that as much in other cultures. And in America, we seem to have degraded that particular aspect of our psyche, that kids these days just don't have a sense of shamefulness for certain acts. And I think that's at part what we saw with the violence that just occurred with these Alabama football players. You know, think about for Kerry and Bird, you know, you guys come from a different generation than Thomas and I. And think about the sense of shame that would, the cloud of shame that would have hung over the act, the violent act that occurred when you guys were kids. If you heard that, would a kid that had been guilty of that crime be able to walk through a classroom and hold their head up? I'm asking. Because I think nowadays, I don't think there is a sense of shame associated with it. I think those kids would walk through a classroom, look around at their peers and go, yeah, I beat that kid within an inch of his life, so what?
I you know what, Blip? I had a son that went to Alabama, and just before he went to Alabama, his sister decided to make his head look like a skunk. And we were having dinner with my son's roommate's parents, and down comes my boy with a skunk head. And I looked at him and I said, you know, our people have been in the United States since the mid-1600s. None of us have gone to jail. The one thing I can give you is a good name. You're taking my name, University of Alabama. And it ties in with what you're saying. It was a, look, don't shame my name. You know, don't do anything out of character. And, of course, the skunk head was no big deal. But it was basically, again, to reinforce the point you're making, yeah, we come from a different – Kerry and I absolutely come from a different generation. But it's but I certainly wasn't shy about saying, guess what? I'm not real happy with you taking my name down there and, you know, and looking like a skunk running around the campus of U of A. So, yeah, I mean, I – guys, all four of us, I've had to really, really do some soul searching this week, and I think all points, every single one of them are valid. I think it's, you know, if you're tuning in tonight and expecting to get the typical ribald frivolity on BAMS, I have to apologize, because every once in a while we do riff off into a situation that is a commentary on society. Anyway, I'm sorry, Blip, I jumped in the middle of your soliloquy, which was quite good, by the way.
Well, it wasn't a skunk, it was plaid, but...
It's, you remember the evening, don't you?
Oh, sure.
Oh, sure. Do we have any callers, Thomas?
We do have a caller, actually. Caller, you're on live, Elizabeth. I just screened you a few minutes ago. What you got for us this evening?
Well, Bird, I think he was asking the gentleman earlier why kids do what they do. Was that one of the questions he was asking the gentleman that was on the phone earlier?
I ask him a lot of things. But, yeah, I was trying to get in his head a little bit about, you know, coming from his background, which is completely different than my background, you know, help me understand why.
Well, let me give you a little history about me. I had a successful business in Birmingham. This was back in, like, 87. And I'm not sure the exact year, 86, 87. And I'm sure all of you know who Lynn Bias is, the basketball player from Maryland that his whole life he wanted to go to play basketball for the Celtics. He had a successful career at Maryland. And he got picked for the Celtics, drafted by the Celtics. And a couple of nights after that, he was doing cocaine in his room with his friends, and, of course, he died. I didn't know about the kid. I never knew anything about him. But I decided then, I looked at his life and his future and what he threw away in that room that evening. I couldn't understand it. I'd never been around it. I just thought, God, I don't have that opportunity. How could this kid that's so super, do you remember him? I mean, do you remember Lynn Bias? Do any of you remember him?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. He was
okay. I mean, he was just absolutely a great basketball player. So anyway, he died. So I decided I was going to do something about it. So I sat down and I decided I would come up with a company. It's called Drug Free for Life. And I went to Washington and I talked to people in Washington. And I came back and I started going to high schools all over the Birmingham area. I went to Tuscaloosa. I went all over Birmingham. I went into every high school. I was a white female going into Parker, going into every school you could imagine, and telling kids, you can't do this. And I told them about Lynn Bias. Well, I went to Leeds High School, and I met John Glenn, who is Charles Barkley's brother. Well, we started doing things. We started having concerts and rap contests, and Derek Thomas and Bobby Humphrey and Howard Cross and Sinbad and everybody you could name. I called on Bon Jovi, the Globetrotters, everybody to get involved, to do anything they could to keep these kids from not doing drugs and drinking. Because I felt like if you give them something to say yes to, they will say no to these other things. So my point is over through the years, I spent all this time with all these kids. It was the most rewarding thing I've ever done in my life. And today, I was coming home. I told Bird about this earlier. I was coming home, and I heard, I'm sorry, I'm going to say jocks. But I said jocks. I don't ever listen to them. But they were talking about Michael Jordan. He's 50 years old this year. And they were talking about him coming to Birmingham. And one guy called in and said, yeah, these basketball players, that was my basketball team. That was my drug-free-for-life basketball kids from high schools in the Birmingham area playing basketball with Michael Jordan. And the guy said, oh, yeah, and somebody just dunked on him. I remember that. I remember all these things. These were things that kids got to do that they never would have gotten to do had they not been drug-free. And to be drug-free and to be on my basketball team, you had to be drug-tested. So the point I'm trying to make is you know, I've been there. I've been around these kids from these inner city schools. I used to pick David Palmer up from his house. He had a brother named Robert. He said, I've got a little brother that wants to play basketball. I would pick them up. I would go in my cars to all these inner city schools and get these kids and try to teach them a different way, to not do drugs, to not drink, that they had a bright future. I mean, I had Mr. Basketball. I took them to John Farrell's tournament in Las Vegas. Some of them had never been on a plane before. I'm just trying to tell you that I know I've been there. These kids at the University of Alabama have everything. I remember, do you remember Bevin Nolan from Tuscaloosa High School? He was a great basketball player. He played with me. He told me he got an answering machine when he was in the ninth grade, I think, or eighth grade, because he was being called every single day as a ninth grader. These kids grow up with everybody wanting to do everything for them because they're great athletes. So they go to the University of Alabama. What better school could they go to? Look at this Eddie Williams. I've got out my book today and I read about him. He has more accolades than you can imagine. This kid is a fabulous football player. But what has he done? What has he done with his life? He has to be accountable. These kids have to be accountable. And that's what I would tell the parents.
Absolutely no question about that. And I think that's where the rubber hits the road on this whole thing. It's where, you know, why is there not more of an accountability? And everything you're saying absolutely rings true, Liz. And it's certainly, you can tell that we've touched a hot button with our listenership because people are calling from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, for God's sakes.
Well, I want to tell you that it's amazing. I've gotten on Facebook in the last year or so, and how many kids that'll say, oh, my God, are you the drug lady? And I'll say, yeah. Oh, my God, do you remember I got to play against Michael Jordan? I got to go to the Bon Jovi concert. They got to do these things because they did the right thing, and that's with Saban. If you do the right thing, you're going to be there. He's giving you – I mean, how many more people can go to work for 3 years in their life and become a millionaire? I know these kids are talented. I know they work hard. But I can't be a millionaire at what I'm doing in 3 years.
Right.
Plus have a college education. So, I mean, you know, I think they have to be accountable, and they have to take responsibility for what they've done. And I think that he's given them everything that they could possibly want or need in life at that school. And I don't understand it, just like you don't understand it.
Well,
but I've been there.
And you've been proactive. Well, this has been a great call. We really appreciate you calling in to BAMS tonight,
okay.
Liz.
All right.
We're gonna bounce over because I've got all my co-hosts
okay.
on the edge of their seat. But thank you
all
so
right.
much.
Okay. Oh, you're welcome. Bye-bye.
Wonderful call. Well, I guess, you know, light fuse run away. Apparently we've had it's been an interesting evening and people are actually thinking about some of the things we've said. So that's a good thing. Blip is having issues. He may have to try to come back in. We'll put him back on Skype. Carrie, let's shift gears a little bit right now. And I know that you've got some upcoming recruits that, you know, let's put, I don't know if I'd call it levity, but let's inject some Alabama football back into the program.
I would love to do that. It has been a very enlightening show. This segment with Skipper will be something that stays with me for a long time. National Signing Day was last week, and we dedicated and as Coach Saban told us on the day of his press conference for signing day this year, he spent that entire day contacting 2014 kids. So I just wanted to throw out a few names of guys that we know Alabama is already involved with. Some have offers, some don't. There's a couple of quarterbacks, David Cornwell of Oklahoma, Jacob Park of South Carolina. There's a running back already committed, Bo Scarborough from Tuscaloosa. Perhaps the next commitment could be another running back, Rock Thomas from Oxford, Alabama. You have a couple of Camerons who are friends. Wide receiver really wants to come to Bama, and if Bama gets him, that's Cameron Sims, then the chances are very, very good that they'll also get Cameron Robinson. Robinson is a left tackle. Both these kids are Louisiana kids, LSU really wants. But Cam Robinson is a left tackle. Many people have already ordained him as our successor. I personally think that Brandon Green will have something to say about that. But regardless, Cam Robinson is the number one left tackle in the country. And he and his friend Cam Sims, a wide receiver, are both very interested. You've got Ermin Lane, a wide receiver from Florida. You have a younger brother of current Alabama player Isaac Luatua, his younger brother, tight end Tyler, from out in La Mirada, California. You have another great offensive tackle, Orlando Brown from Georgia, very, very big-time recruit. You have gray shirt Bradley Bozeman from Hanley Roanoke, who will re-sign with Alabama. You have Elisha Shaw. Now, Elisha is a big defensive lineman, a nose-guard type of fellow from Tucker, Georgia. Interesting thing about Elisha, two of the assistant coaches on that staff are Terry Jones Jr. and Todrick Malone, both former Bama players. You have a big-time defensive tackle from Virginia named Andrew Brown, and another big-time defensive end from Virginia, Deshaun Hand. You have defensive end from Vigor High School down in Pritchard, Alabama, Justin Thornton, who we spoke earlier of the Kevin Steele hire. Another eminent off-the-field hire is Kerry Stevenson, who just resigned a few days ago as head coach at Vigor, and he plans to come to Tuscaloosa to take an off-the-field job under Coach Saban. So that'll give us an upper hand for Justin Thornton. You have defensive lineman Lorenzo Carter from Norcross, Georgia. You have E.J. Moss from Asheville. You have a big-time insider from Gray Williams. Morgan Humphrey, we talked about right before the show, cornerback at Hoover, number 10 player in the nation. You have an Opelika product who is interested in Apple, interestingly. Steve Universe, cornerback. And this is all a lot of home. You have Jordan Sims and offensive guard who got offers to play. And I guess the others, Alabama, so he said the big chance to work tight. Those just a few names. I didn't even go over the whole. There were more. Those just a few names that are already out on the radar who are possible. And if you could possible signees. So, there it is.
I want to add a couple of guys. I don't know if they've got Bama offers, but I know he's made some noise. Landon Collins' little brother, Jared Willis, is on Bama's roster. And I want to touch on Trey Williams. I'm not sure if you said this. I apologize. But Trey Williams, well, yeah, I understand. But he's at St. Paul's, and I literally could walk to that campus. So that one will be an interesting battle from what I hear. And AJ McCarron's a St. Paul's product, so there's a little bit of a pipeline. There's a chance there. I'm not going to put a ton on it because, good Lord, these kids aren't going to sign for another year. But I do. Those are a couple of things I wanted to throw out to add to your list.
Oh yeah, I did mention Trey. Definitely. The reason I didn't mention Gerald Willis is because he currently does not have Bama in his top three. A lot can change. A lot probably will change between now and February, so it was good that you mentioned him. I certainly think if Alabama wants him, they'll make a play, because ever since that day she made that scowl when Landon Collins committed to Bama on national TV, Mom has now decided that it's quite okay to have a son at Alabama. So if and when Gerald Willis decides he wants to come, Mom and Landon, I'm sure, will be happy to lend plenty of moral support. Right now, though, they're not in the top three, but I think they're probably number four. And right. So, yeah, that was good to bring him up. I appreciate that. But there's, recruiting is a good coach will tell you is a lot like shaving. If you miss a day, you look like a bum. So Alabama is massively working on recruits every day of the week, whether Saban's in town or not. There are duties that have to be done regarding recruiting. And I was just wanting to toss out a few names. I know a couple of other kids that would love – I'm going to name three more, Thomas. A couple of kids that would love to have offers but don't. But if they have a good senior year and do well at camp this summer, they might be able to earn an offer. One of those is in your neck of the woods. That's Foley wide receiver DeMarcus Bingham. He is jonesing for an Alabama offer. He's built a lot like Julio, but having watched him in person, he reminds me a little bit more of Kevin Norwood, but still a very solid player. There's a quarterback at Mortimer Jordan that I scouted. His name is Delvin Hodges. He's a solid. I'd compare him in high school probably maybe similar to Greg McElroy. But he would love to come to Bama, but it's probably going to take a good camp and a good senior year for him to have any shot at an offer. I don't know that he'll get one. And another guy that's kind of a wild card because even though he rushed for over 1,000 yards, he was forced to share carries with a less talented senior, and that was probably a big reason Prattville missed the playoffs for the first time in about a decade last year. I'm talking about Cameron Petway, a 6 foot, 225, 4.5 in the 40 guy who will get a lot more carries this year for Prattville, and he already has a Florida State offer and I believe an Auburn offer. He has been in communication with Kirby Smart and has been told that it's a very good chance he may end up with an Alabama offer. So that's three other in-state guys I'll mention. A lot of the state of Alabama class of 2014 is more talented than was the 13 class, especially the top six or seven guys. When you're talking about Humphrey and Trey Williams and that group of individuals, there's about six or seven guys at the top of that class of 2014 for our state that could play for literally anybody in the SEC or anybody in the country. It's going to be a big-time year in the state of Alabama, and it's going to be fun to go out and cover those high school games this fall and try to uncover some new names. But, gosh, the way the Internet is now, it's really hard to find new names. But, it's fun, and it's a never-ending process, and it's something that our fans love to hear. And one of the things I like about BAMS Radio is the amount of time that we dedicate to recruiting, because one of my gripes with mainstream talk radio, sports talk radio, is they seem to look at recruiting as kind of like something that they're forced to deal with occasionally, and they would not enjoy it, and they would not deal with it at all if they could get away with it. But I think that the fans, the audience, I think they want to hear about recruiting on a regular basis. I don't know anybody that doesn't, that's a true fan. So that's one thing I really appreciate about BAMS is the fact that we do take time to talk recruiting pretty much every week.
I just have one other question, Kerry, and I realize that, again, early in the recruiting cycle, and I haven't really pulled everything together for 2014 recruiting for Alabama yet, but guy is extraordinarily highly rated going into the summer camp circuit. Leonard Fournette, the running back out of Louisiana. Where does Alabama stand with him? And then I have to screen somebody, so I'm going to hush my mouth for a little while.
That's a great question. Leonard's possibly the number one running back in the nation for the class of 2014. Alabama's in pretty good standing with him because of the aforementioned Burton Burns. Burton coached high school football in Louisiana, and as such, he's kind of considered a de facto member of the coaching fraternity in the high school ranks in Louisiana. What I'm saying is they love him. They love Burton. Burton is always welcome at every high school in Louisiana. And obviously, LSU has made Fournette a priority. And like Alabama, LSU will play three or four running backs on a regular basis, so they do have that to sell. And they are putting guys in the league. They got that to sell. So it's basically an Alabama-LSU race. If I were to handicap it at this very early, 11 and three-fourths months before signing day, I'd probably handicap it something like 55-45 LSU over Bama. But Bama's certainly made Leonard a priority. It's going to be a tough battle to get him out of Louisiana. But every year, as time goes by, Alabama is starting to take more and more kids that Les Miles has targeted. And don't think his fans haven't noticed. So that is actually adding pressure to him to get Leonard Fournette. But that's a great point, Thomas. He is certainly on Alabama's radar. I would say LSU has a very slight lead right now. But because of Burton Burns and Nick Saban and the fact that guys like Mark Ingram and Trent Richardson are in the league and Eddie Lacy is about to be going in the first round, they certainly have Leonard's attention. Leonard Fournette knows Alabama. He's visited Alabama, and he'll be visiting some more. But boy, LSU is under the gun to sign that kid. But, yeah, that was a great time, a great one to bring up. And I know that Blip wanted to talk a little bit about basketball recruiting. I think we could probably save that for next week because I'm going to need to run here whenever we go to the next break. I do have some names, both for the late April signing period of this year, class of 13, and also for the early signing period of the kids that will be seniors in high school this fall. I do have a set of names for each of those classes that Alabama is seriously looking at. I will name one guy right now on basketball recruiting, and that's simply because a personal friend of mine is at his game tonight scouting him. I've got a friend who has a weekday job in New York, and then he goes to Indiana or Tuscaloosa on the weekends, wherever. But he is scouting John Sevier tonight in New York City. And John Sevier is probably the top unsigned point guard, not counting the early signees that signed back in October. John Sevier is a class of 13 kid, and Alabama is after him. They'd like him to be a part of the April class. They don't want to stop with just Jimmy Taylor and Shannon Hale. They want to add another guard. They're also scouting a junior college guard, and I'll go into that next week. But before I close out on basketball recruiting, I was just notified via Twitter a few minutes ago that both Shannon Hale and Jimmy Taylor, who are already signed with Alabama to enter school this fall, both have moved up into the ESPN top 100 players in the country. So that's a good sign. There are some positive things about the basketball program. There is help on the way. Hale's the better offensive player. Taylor's the better defensive player. But they both will have a role on next year's basketball team. I'm going to go ahead and say we got to be pretty close to a break. So I actually need to roll. And I'm going to let Bird take us to a break. I've enjoyed being with you guys tonight. I'm sorry that we lost Blip, but he did give us a good solid hour there. And he did a good job on his soapbox. I think all four of us had our soapbox moments tonight, which was a great. And we had two great callers, Skipper and Elizabeth, and our pal Josh. And we love all our callers. But I tell you what, I'm going to take us to break right now, and we'll be back in just a few. You'll have Thomas, you'll have Bird, and maybe if we're lucky, you'll have Legend. But you're listening to BAMS Radio on Block Talk Radio.
Rolling, rolling, rolling. Rolling, 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 though the streams are swollen, keep them doggies rolling, right. Through rain and wind and weather, hell-bent for leather, wishing my gal was by my side. All the things I'm missing, good fiddles, love and kissing, are waiting at the end of my ride. Move 'em on, hit 'em up, hit 'em up, move 'em on, hit 'em up, rawhide. Cut 'em out, ride 'em in, cut 'em out, cut 'em out. Ride 'em in raw. Keep moving, 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 though they're disapproving. Keep them doggies moving raw. Don't try to understand them, just rope them through. Hit 'em up, hit 'em up, move 'em on, hit 'em up, raw high. Cut 'em out, ride 'em in, cut 'em out, ride 'em in, raw home.
Welcome back to BAMS Radio. After going through shootings and OG and rap in the house, I'm sorry I had to just play something a little different. And there's Rawhide for you by the immortal Frankie Lane. Blip, welcome back. Thank you.
Well, we are having emotional issues with our technology, and I don't know if you guys can hear this or not. I know that Flip has tried to come back on with us in a call-in. We lost him first, and now we are basically dead in the water. So thank you for listening to BAMS tonight. We're going to call this one a wrap, and we will see you next week after we get some of the technical issues lined out and ironed out. You're listening to BAMS Radio, and we do appreciate it.